Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Digital marketing was not really a thing. It started by just going out and networking, listening to people, asking them what worked, what didn't work, you know, ringing up a estate agent saying, look, I'd love to do your mortgages, and walking up and down the high street with my briefcase, really. You know, I just recently went with my cousin who works for Virgin Atlantic on a trip to Austin, and I ended up doing both of the pilot's mortgages. Like all businesses, it's about understanding the customer's needs, their pain points, and trying to work out where we can stand out and make a difference and have an incredible customer experience and good customer outcomes where others can't.
May is going to be an exciting month for me with the launch of Heightened Senses, the new podcast I'm co-creating with Christo Funsale, a South African helicopter pilot turned Swedish entrepreneur with a particular interest in the world of AI-powered sensors. If you're listening to this show, you won't actually be able to miss it because I'll be dropping the first episode into this feed when the time comes. However, there is a trailer now, so please do find it wherever you're listening to this and follow it in its own right. Also, the social media feeds are busy being created, so if I bother you soon to follow a page or two, please do oblige. That's Heightened Senses, but with an AI instead of an EI. In that show, we'll be speaking to entrepreneurs in the tech world, wonder kids building the sort of high-risk but highly scalable businesses that VCs love to back. But there's still a place in this world for the sort of entrepreneur who builds a business by fostering human relationships, knocking on doors, shaking hands, speaking to people on aeroplanes, and by them building products for the people they meet along the way. Welcome to How to Lend Money to Strangers with Brendan LaGrange. Chris Shoetraps, founder of some of the UK's leading mortgage brands, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Chris, your career started in stockbroking and good old-fashioned banking,
yep,
but took a few interesting turns along the way. But I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, so talk to me about those early days.
So actually, I left college early because I was a bit of a socialite, and the principal said to me, look, I think maybe you'd start again next year. And I went home, and I went down to Primark, which was a brand new concept then, bought a £30 suit, and did the rounds of all the recruitment agents. And luckily for me, HSBC were the first ones to offer me a job. And I did 4 weeks training with them and was like the class clown. And by chance, I was actually pretty good at job. I was an unregulated seller. I worked selling essentially credit cards, loans, pre-credit crunch. So customers would call up and say, I'm interested in taking a loan. And you'd say, okay, how much do you want? And they'd say, well, £8,000. And you'd say, well, how about taking 15? So started unregulated seller for HSBC, moved on to being a stockbroker in the city, which was, again, pre-crash, we brought IPOs to the market, everything from mining companies through to ASOS, which was called As Seen on Screen at the time, Domino's Pizza into the UK. So for a kid who came from a council house and, you know, had sort of dropped out of college, it was very glamorous, I thought, at the time.
It was a spell consulting in the mortgage space, and I figure it must have triggered something because in 2011, you started your entrepreneurial journey in that world of mortgages. Was entrepreneurship always a goal of yours, or was this something that you sort of learned about yourself or just stumbled into?
You know, it's a great question, actually. I had, like a lot of people, had some businesses at school. You know, I hired a web server and divided it up and sold web hosting and sold some signal boosters and some sweets from briefcases and stuff. You know, the cliche entrepreneur stories, I guess. And, you know, I worked for an estate agency, a corporate estate agency who trained me as a mortgage advisor. I'd gone from stockbroking, and I sort of had a bit of a gut feeling. I wouldn't say that I knew what was coming, but the mood turned in the city pretty quick. And I came back and I worked in banking for a very short period of time as a branch manager for NatWest. And it went from getting up at 4 a.m. in the morning and getting home at 10 to sort of unlocking this rural country branch of NatWest and sitting on the counter all day talking to old people. And it was like yin and yang. So I went into mortgages, started with a corporate estate agent, and went pretty well. I was enjoying it, did very well in the region that I was in. And I worked with an estate agent who said, oh, I'm going to start my own estate agency. You should do my mortgages. And I thought, bloody hell, I'm going to be driving a Bentley before I know it, gold-plated teeth. I'm going to be living the dream. And so that's how the journey started with the Mortgage Hut. I have to say, I wasn't in a Bentley very quickly, and it was a bit of a journey, but it's been a great one along the way, for sure.
This is obviously a show about lending, and the Mortgage Hut story is going to be the core of it. But
yeah.
I want to take a little bit of a detour, because in 2011, the same year you were starting Mortgage Hut, you also went on a very different sort of career journey, and I'm quite interested in that.
Yeah.
You joined the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary as a special constable. So what inspired that? Was police in the family, or?
Well, I'd love to tell you that I'd come from a long line of police officers, but actually I met a shift from Hampshire Police on a night out, and I made friends with them. And what you can't tell from me sat at a desk is I'm actually 6'7". So they said, you would make a fantastic police officer. And I thought, oh, you know, that sounds like good fun. And I got halfway through the training and I thought, bloody hell, this is a pain. And I kept going, and I joined as a special constable, which is the route to generally becoming a regular police officer. And I loved a lot of elements of the job. At the time in Hampshire, we had things called area cars, which were the big 5 series BMWs, and we'd turn up to all the 999 calls. And it was great fun. It really was. But talking about entrepreneurial flair, I did think to myself, is this me for the next 30 years? You know, because police officers do an incredible job, shape people's lives, make change, but actually their income's pretty set. Coming from a background of being a stockbroker where, you know, I was earning a significant amount a month back down to a normal income, I thought to myself, you know, the stockbroking taught me that money didn't make you happy, for sure. But on the same account, I wasn't sure that sustaining on the income was going to be the lifestyle that I wanted to pursue either, I guess.
Yeah, and obviously you've stayed in that area in terms of charity work you're doing with organizations in the policing world.
Yeah.
And you did start Police Mortgages as a specialist. So I thought for a moment it was an intentional move to learn the tricks from the inside.
Oh, it was brilliant, because I just started the mortgage business. And actually, as I alluded, a guy who was a friend of mine said, oh, I'm going to start an estate agency. You do the mortgages for me, which was great until he didn't start his estate agency. And suddenly I had no lead sources and not a lot of money. I had started the business with 10 grand and I had already spent 6 grand of it by the time the door had opened. And so what was really great was when I went into the police station, so I'd volunteer 2 or 3 days a week, normally a Friday, Saturday night where, you know, the real fun stuff happened, I guess. And I'm allowed to say that because I'm not in the police anymore. And every time I went into the police station, someone would go, you're the mortgage guy, right? And they go, I actually have a mortgage and I need help with it. So it started with my colleagues, then it spread to the wider sort of area, and then eventually a lot of people in the force. And at that point, I was thinking, you know what, maybe there's a niche here. Maybe this is a great niche because they're hardworking. Police officers can't be made redundant. So, you know, from a lending point of view, there's a lot of stability in that. Their income's fairly fixed. The trajectory's defined by a police pay scale. And they do have some challenges. If they get adverse credit, it can cause them challenges at work. So that limits the number of people who do end up in, doesn't stop it completely, but does limit the number of people in financial distress. So that's how it started, really.
You know, if you think about today, the big data world, there's a lot of hyper targeting of segments because we've got all the online data and we can rebrand the same thing over and over in different ways and try different ads and A/B test things online. But there's always been this value in being able to understand a niche and tweak a product for them. But I want to come back and sort of reestablish our chronological order here. In 2011, you were building Mortgage Hut. You had this little bit of, you know, sort of childhood entrepreneurship. You've had a number of careers in the banking space and public facing space at this stage. But as you started and you're trying to get this off the ground, already your core lead, as we've heard, disappeared. What was that process like?
You know, it was a journey, really. I spent a lot of time listening to people who were already in the industry, asking them what worked, what didn't work. Digital marketing was not really a thing. It started by just going out and networking, you know, ringing up estate agents saying, look, I'd love to do your mortgages, and walking up and down the high street with my briefcase, really. And with no money, you know, I remember I used to get paid the commission from the banks on a Wednesday, and I'd go to my mum and dad's house on a Monday and borrow some stuff to make some lunch. I was that poor. And I had a pregnant girlfriend at the time and a rental property. And it was through stubbornness, really, that I persevered. But, you know, it was definitely not very glamorous, I would say.
No, but it's also great to hear that in a modern setting. I mean, in a way, in hindsight, knowing it turns out well. But, you know, obviously there's a bit of a cliche that, you know, your out-of-touch parents will tell you to put on a suit and take a CV to the local store to apply for a job. But there is still a reality to that. Like, if you're willing to walk around, shake hands, and knock on doors, you can make your business work. It's not all VC-backed, you know, wonder kid startup in the AI space. And you've built some of the most well-known mortgage brands in the UK, because it's not just Mortgage Hut. So talk to me a bit about what you've built that into and what that business looks like today.
There's a couple of things that we like. We like an underdog story. Founders are very passionate about what they do, what they believe in, and generally they will tell anyone who's willing to listen. So the mortgage business has been on a journey. You know, as time has gone on, we've eked out niches. So our main Mortgage Hut brand deals with everyone from vanilla customers all the way through to, you know, on organically using long tail search terms, we're number one for like limited company directors, self-employed, bad credit, complex customers who maybe, you know, I would say come to us sometimes expecting the worst. But the UK market, mortgage market, performs exceptionally well and is a good example of how a capital market should work. There's normally an option for someone. You know, and so we deal with over 100 inquiries from customers every day, our team of advisors. We do hundreds and hundreds of mortgages every month completed. And then we have specialist brands like the police, as you say. We're lucky enough to work with 23 of the UK's police federations. We deal with forces directly as well. We also work with aviation. So again, smelling out niches. My wife, who had been a mortgage advisor by chance previously, I swear it wasn't set up like this. I met her when she was cabin crew for British Airways. And I used to go on an awful lot of trips with her. And every time I got on the plane, the pilots or the cabin crew would say, oh, it's so difficult getting mortgages because our income's non-taxable. Because we don't pay tax in the UK because half of it's earned overseas and it's expenses and it's this and it's that. And I would say, well, that's not a very complicated problem, actually. You know, I just recently went with my cousin who works for Virgin Atlantic on a trip to Austin with her. And I ended up doing both of the pilot's mortgages, the head cabin crew mortgage. So, you know, it's that having conversations and sort of smelling the niches out. And now we work alongside some of the teams at British Airways, Virgin Atlantic. We deal with pilots from across the world, really, because you have a lot of pilots who are based overseas. So quite a far-reaching business. We have teams of specialists there that's really important. They understand how it's done. But I would say, like all businesses, it's about talking to customers, understanding the customer's needs, their pain points, and trying to work out where we can stand out and make a difference and have an incredible customer experience and good customer outcomes where others can't.
You've already, you know, established a very deep knowledge of the UK mortgage landscape and mortgage scene. But actually, you've also now got international experience because more recently, you've been working in Dubai. So talk to me about how you're brought in there and then maybe a little bit about what working in Dubai has taught you, maybe what the landscape looks like there and how that's different to what you were used to in the UK.
Well, honestly, it's fascinating. I genuinely believe that anyone who works in finance or has an interest in finance would be amazed at the differences. So actually, in 2018, I was approached by a business called Property Finder. It's essentially the right move if you're in the UK of the Middle East, backed by the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund. And they had bought this mortgage business that had not really performed as well as they'd hoped. And so I got approached on LinkedIn by their head of HR saying, look, you know, your name's been mentioned, you know, I think maybe you'd be a good candidate for this. And essentially I said, you know, I'm not looking for a job. I've got a mortgage business. I've got a company. I'm more than happy. And I don't know, like with my wife, you know, one minute she wasn't living in the house, the next minute she was. Similar in this situation. One minute I said, look, I'm not looking for a job, but I'm happy to speak to the chief commercial officer. And next minute I'm arriving with my suitcases running the biggest mortgage business in the Middle East. So the differences were that mortgages are effectively unregulated in the Middle East, which meant on the first day when I landed, I looked at some of our competitors' marketing And they would take the rate from one product and the fee from another product and the standard variable from another product. And they would just put it all on one poster and pretend it was one product. And the other thing was, you know, in the UK, one of the great things about the mortgage market is it has, generally speaking, most mortgage lenders pay the same commission to intermediaries. It's a relatively similar thing. So there's not really the issue of price bias. Whereas one of the challenges I faced when I went in there was the bank that we recommended were not offering the best product. They were actually probably offering the fifth best product. And I sat down around the table and I had to explain to them, I understood they paid us the most commission and we were grateful for that. But unless they were willing to offer us the best product and the best outcomes for our customers, we wouldn't be recommending them anymore. So, you know, it was a very, very different world. And I took the approach, which worked exceptionally well for us in building trust in the brand, because we had a great parent company that had an incredible brand, incredible trust. You know, we essentially introduced our own compliance infrastructure, our own systems and processes. And, you know, we suddenly went from saying, you know, let's try and make the most money to let's have the best customer outcomes. Because if you run a business like that, whether that be a lender, whether that be an intermediary, whatever the business may be, if you put the customer at the hub of what you do, you actually will make money anyway.
When I started my career 20 years ago, compliance was the guy you ran away from. As long as he didn't talk to you, you could do, you know, do what you wanted.
Yeah.
And the advice business, I mean, you would know as well from the stockbroking world, you've had a lot of bad stories from advice givers in general. And as you say, the UK is actually quite well regulated on that front. But around the world, that trust is vital to establish and to make transparent. So yeah, fascinating to hear kind of a real world use case of that.
You can only really affect this stuff if you actually believe it. You know, actually as a leader, if you believe it right at the core of you and you lead from the front with that, and that's the message that you're there. And in the financial game, fundamentally, it's all about trust.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You know, it's all about trust and it's easily lost and very hard to win. But you have to, for a long-term successful business in financial advice, you have to strive to actually have the best customer outcomes, because otherwise, long-term, that's going to rot you somewhere. Somewhere in the business, there's going to be a rot that's going to take you down, I think, is my opinion.
Yeah, and I think certainly if you think about the mortgage world, and in particular in the UK, where refinancing is always available, you are going to get caught out in it. 30 years, the customer sitting there with the mortgage when they say, wait a minute,
why am I getting such a bit of deal? And we are lucky, you know, the regulator in the UK, they are very independent. They do a very good job.
Yeah, indeed. Chris, you obviously spend a lot of your day talking to the borrowers, to the customers about mortgages. But with my show, I'm talking often to the lenders. We've gone through a period of, you know, decades of stable, almost non-existent interest rates that suddenly changed overnight. But as lenders look at the mortgage market today and they think about the different products they're offering, with your experience in the market, with your experience abroad, with your experience just day-to-day seeing what borrowers are looking for, what are some things that mortgage lenders should be considering when they design their products? What's seeming to work well for customers in the current environment?
There is lots of innovation in the market. You know, I listened to your podcast recently with Perenna. You know, there are some great lenders who, you know, Kensington, who are now owned by Barclays, came out with a similar fixed for the lifetime of the mortgage product. which gives stability for consumers. A little bit like the adoption of technology, okay? The market can only move as quickly as the consumers move. There has to be a bit of a fundamental mindset shift in looking at longer-term fixed rates, because the fear that I think borrowers have is that, you know, we're great as humans at being super optimistic. Although we realistically know now that rates are not going to go down to 0.something%, I think secretly some borrowers still at their heart are hoping for that to come back. And so we're like, you know what, I don't want to fix for 25 years, just in case. There have been some bad practices where pricing, there's been some push on headline interest rates, but some exorbitant fees, percentage-based fees. You know, I think the reality is that lenders, where they really differentiate themselves is on criteria. You know, you've got two lending models, really. Volume, which is rate-driven, which has been for the last couple of years, even before rates came up, margins were really starting to get squeezed there. Or you've got like criteria and niche-based lending, you know. But there are some great lenders out there at the moment, digital mortgages. You know, we just had a mortgage that my colleague told me about where it's a purchase at 95% and the lender's done a desktop val. You know, that's unheard of. They were able to offer within one day. And so there's, I think it's harder generally for larger legacy lenders to be able to pivot quickly because they have legacy systems. You know, no one, as much as the leaders of large FTSE banks want to innovate and change, they have to balance that with risk of, you know, we only have to think back to TSB a couple of years ago where some customers were locked out of their bank accounts for up to 6 months, missing mortgage payments, their salaries weren't credited in a botched IT migration. And so, and I am only imagining this, I'm not saying this is what happens, but if I was a CEO in my mid-50s, maybe getting close to retirement with a great share package and options, would I want to change the world? Probably not. Would I want to innovate slowly? Probably. And so we've got some really good smaller lenders, Prenna being one, you know, digital mortgages. We've got loads of other ones coming into the market who are innovating. And I think part of their challenge is that brokers themselves have to be more aware of the options. Education is always the number one challenge for these lenders, really, in changing mindsets.
So I was just thinking as you were talking there, probably the same frustration that doctors feel, because now me as a borrower, I can easily go onto Google and search and get 100 bits of advice and articles written, and some of those are paid for articles, some are not. It must be a different sort of challenge to what it was when you started.
Our advisors in the business actually every single day meet a different lenders, either underwriter, business development manager, to understand changes in criteria. We'll give them high-level data on types of customers we're seeing, and then we're able to understand that. So first of all, it's the advisors having the right competency, skills, knowledge to be able to make sure that they can answer these questions. As you said, TikTok's great for some really viral videos about how you can save money here or do this. And the problem that you have as well is that TikTok, you know, I can think of a couple of really successful TikTok influencers. They might be British, but design their videos for the US market. And products are very different. Regulations very different. And so it's just about having conversations with customers. I think it's about being open as well. You know, the great thing is Google is incredible at being able to sift out what is good quality content, what's AI written. You know, I've been saying for a little while, don't write content from AI because Google will start to pick up on that. And, you know, that's, we're seeing some of our competitors now really getting heavily penalized on Google rankings because they're using AI-driven content. Most of our customers will start online reading articles, understanding, answering those longer term questions, and then the advisor's been able to answer it. But you're right, they do get false information. The challenge that we have with social media being so unregulated, I could start a page tomorrow and profess to be an absolute wizard in as maybe in being a doctor. You know, I can give medical advice, but in reality, doctors have done 7-8 years of training. You know, they've studied under people who actually know what they're doing as well. So, you know, misinformation, I guess, is a challenge across all industries. From a good consumer output point of view, you want the customers to speak to someone like a broker or a financial advisor or someone to answer the questions, even if they don't then transact with them, even if they transact directly and execute it themselves, having all the knowledge and information available to them.
Yeah, I guess it's the worst case is that they feel that they've got all the information a broker would have given them and act on it.
You don't know what you don't know. Yeah, it's the challenge.
Now, one last thing I want to check with you is you spoke about the sort of the one-day turnaround. You know, mortgages come as such a stressful and busy part of your life. You're looking for the house. There's five people bidding on it. You've got to make an offer today. You've got to get solicitors and surveyors out. You've got to try and look, are there schools here and where's the train station? You've got a lot going on, even in the smallest of moves. And there's always been this thing, well, the mortgage is going to take weeks and it's going to be a pain to do. But again, a lot of this, I think, is handed down wisdom because you're speaking to your parents who maybe got a mortgage 20 years ago or your friend got a mortgage 10 years ago. And the world is obviously changing very quickly. Obviously, one-day mortgages are not the norm and not where we expect the world to exist in that space. But what is that mortgage process like if I want to go and get a new mortgage today?
I guess when we talk about one-day mortgages, which is, as you say, not super common, they are there. You know, we're almost as surprised as the customers are sometimes when it comes through. But, you know, the process in itself is via brokers relatively similar. You know, we will speak to a customer and there are some businesses, you know, my friend runs a very large mortgage business that they transact only with the customers on live chat. Make the recommendations on live chat, and the brokers can go from doing 10 mortgages to potentially 60 mortgages a month. Ultimately, someone is still generally, normally, manually keying that into a lender system at the moment. But you touched on it, okay? If you get a one-day mortgage, it really doesn't make a huge difference, actually. It takes away the anxiety. It gives you certainty, because in the UK, mortgage offers are legally binding as long as you haven't misdisclosed or committed frauds, something similar, material fact has been omitted. What you then have is probably still a fairly drawn-out process with a solicitor who's still doing manual land registry checks and ordering inquiries in and ordering searches, and you've got a long chain. And a little bit like you and I probably won't get on a plane at the moment without a pilot. Planes can fly themselves without pilots. And I hate to ruin the careers for some of our customers who work for British Airways and the Virgin Atlantic and undermine the amazing work that they do. But in reality, there is potential for planes to fly themselves. But we're not comfortable with that yet as consumers. And I guess that there is a place where mortgages will be instant. A little bit like when you go on to Amazon, you buy something and you blink and you think, wow, did I actually buy that? And it reacts on our impulse and it's a frictionless purchase. Okay, what we need to be careful of is that mortgages, we don't just have a single mortgage source providing one product that is frictionless where people end up taking a product that maybe isn't suitable for them.
Yeah, it's the idea of friction, right? And it's come up before, and for mortgage, you want a cooling off period, but the lender should be thinking about the experience of that. And it's that approval. Okay, you've got 200,000 approved.
Yes.
You know, a little asterisk there that says we're checking some bits and pieces, but I've got my place to go to, my plan A, and I know my amount and it covers this house I want to buy. I can make an offer.
And you can't return your house that you bought. You know, your Amazon, if you buy the toilet brush that you don't need, you can send it back. And this is where financial regulation is interesting because, you know, as consumers, and I'm a consumer when I make this comment, we can't be trusted solely to make the right decisions all the time. Because if you buy a house, you probably only buy a house every 6, 7, 8, 10 years, 15 years, whatever it may be. And so mortgages in stable markets like the UK, where prices are relatively consistent because there's a severe undersupply of stock being built, you know, it's a relatively stable lending environment. Lenders probably can make a lot of the decisions now without documents, and it's just about moving in that direction. And you know, there are risk committees from a regulation point of view. You don't want to move too quickly and end up in a new stage 2008.
Yeah, and I think we all understand when we start the house hunting purchase how unique most houses are. And the UK has obviously got an old house stock where every house has its quirks. You know, I lived in Hong Kong for 8 years and, you know, we looked at apartments to rent. And I remember going to one, it was like the 70th floor of one of 16 blocks in a development. Each of those flats is essentially the same. The amount of price date you've got, you know, they're selling hundreds of them every week. And so as a bank, if you're wanting to do automatic pricing, you want to check things, you've got so much certainty around the value of that flat because it's exactly the same as one that was sold a week ago. But that doesn't exist for most normal houses, even though my house, I'm in a little estate that's, they're all built at the same time. They look pretty much the same, a slightly different garden, slightly different parking, slightly different sizes, different directions they're facing in. Even those make a real difference when you're talking a 30-year mortgage. And the further you go from the city, the more that's true. And the mortgage, you can't escape the link to the house. Chris, if people listening, I guess, from either side, they might be interested in talking to you. If people wanted to speak to you, wanted to learn more about Mortgage Hut or the brands underneath that umbrella, where are some good places for them to go online to keep track of that?
If they want to follow me personally, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on most of the social media platforms. We obviously have our website, which has over 1 million unique visitors. You can subscribe to our newsletter. You know, we write a lot of interesting content around niches within the markets, you know, and where new opportunities come up. Yeah. And my advice would be, even if it's not our business in that process, it's always worth speaking to brokers. Well worth getting good quality advice, even if you don't take that advice and you do it yourself. You know, the great thing is that most mortgage advisors in the UK will give the advice for free. If they do charge a fee, they're only charging to process the application. They're not charging for the advice. So, you know, get some second opinions. You know, there's lots of great online content. Just make sure that the people that are giving you that information are credible, are experienced and qualified to do so.
You know, it's a great resource for lenders as well to be sense checking their products to make sure we're building products that actually serve the borrower's needs. Create that conversation so that when you innovate, when you bring out something new, the brokers understand the product and can pass that on, but equally that you're hearing from them in the design. But Chris, before we let you go, there's one more thing I want to talk about. And in the last couple of years, you've also started to build out a restaurant and pub empire. So as we close, just talk to me about that, how you got into hospitality.
I would still describe it as maybe a bit of an unhealthy hobby. But, you know, we have some absolutely incredible businesses within the group that we either own or invested in. Some restaurants, some high-end restaurants, some pubs, which are generally rural country, some bars. Competitive socializing, by the way, is the next big thing. Shuffleboard, electronic darts, you know, all of these things. Because nearly 30% of 18 to 25-year-olds now don't drink. So the drinking culture is changing. A little bit like in the restaurants catering for vegans and intolerances and allergies and allergens. It is very, very different to financial services. Our customer buying journey in financial services is long, trust-based. The cash flow window is very, very long. Hospitality, if someone eats in, you know, I've got a restaurant in Southampton in the Marina, which just won Best Restaurant at the British Restaurant Awards. If someone's eating a meal there, maybe they're going on a first date. The money's in the bank account tomorrow. But there are other challenges. You know, you tend to find that mortgage advisors are relatively stable beings. They're regulated. They're pretty normal people. Sometimes chefs can be a bit more flamboyant, should we say. I pick my words wisely because we have over 400 people working across the group. But it's an interesting business. It's exactly the same concept, putting the customer at the heart of what you do, customer experience, you know, speaking to customers, understanding what the needs are, a little bit like the lenders do directly with customers, directly with brokers, understanding data. We're one of few businesses, I think, that will literally email every customer personally the day after they visited with us and ask them how the experience was. That's not an automated email. Someone actually does that. My role within the businesses is sitting back and saying, what's the opportunity? What are other people doing? You know, how do we drive forward? And it is a cliche, and I'm sorry for it, but if you're not moving forward, you're definitely going backwards. And so that's what I try and encourage our management teams across all of the businesses that I'm lucky enough to work with, is saying, how do we continue to be better? You know, good customer outcomes, helping them into the house, having people come out and have a good time. That's why we run businesses, having happy customers.
Yeah. So I'll put links to Henderson Pub in the show notes as well. But around that Southampton sort of area, as you said, some really lovely settings in the countryside. Also some stuff right in the heart of town for the younger folk listening. Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thanks for sharing your insights.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. Please do look for and follow the show on your favorite podcast platform and share the updates widely on LinkedIn, where lending nerds are found in our largest concentration. Plus, send me a connection request while you're there. This show is written and recorded by myself, Brendan LaGrange, in Brighton, England. Show music is by I Am Wake, and you can find show notes and written transcripts at www.howtolendmoneytostrangers.show. And I'll see you again next Thursday.
Mom
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.